Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. Her favorite sound is the crunch of leaves in autumn, Nina Modak.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. This is Nina. I'm your host. And today, I know it's only episode 3, but we're doing something a little bit different. Today I have Ali White with me, and she is such a fountain of knowledge, so much so that when I was doing her interview, we ran over big time. So I decided to split the interview into a two-parter. So in the first part today, we're going to be talking about her experience with allergies, as she is not only an allergy sufferer herself, she's also an allergy mum. And we'll be looking at her journey as an allergy mum in part 2 next week. So I'm really excited for you to hear all she has to offer, all the valuable knowledge and information and support and encouragement that she has to give you. Okay, without further ado, let's get on with the interview. Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Today I have the lovely Ali White with me. And now, of many of the people I have interviewed over the last few months, unlike them, she's not only a mother to an allergic child, she also has allergies herself. So, and as well as that, she's also a blogger. And I'm sure many other hidden talents we don't know about. So I'm very excited because you're not only getting an allergy mum perspective, you're also getting an allergy sufferer perspective. So welcome, Ali.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you so much, Nina.
So let's start with your allergy journey. Where did it start?
For myself, it was as a child. I was one of those sickly babies. And was allergic to egg, milk, wheat, citrus, apples, all sorts of things. And this was in the 60s, where there was no blogging, there were no recipes. So my mother had to learn how to do it all from scratch and very much alone.
Yeah.
And
this wasn't in the UK, because obviously by your accent, people in the UK are going to know you're not from England, but
that's right. It's not a regional accent. I was in Canada, in Toronto. So the Golden Horseshoe in Canada has a lot of allergies, but still back then it was all very unusual. So I was the kid taking my own food to birthday parties and schools and all of those things.
Okay, and then how did you discover your allergies? How did your mum discover your allergies?
It was failure to thrive. I was just being constantly ill, not growing, and a very skinny baby. So was the traditional, fortunately I respond well to traditional allergy testing, the skin prick test, so I swell up nicely. So it was easy to diagnose with those tests back there, which are still very similar to the ones we use today, sadly. Very, very similar process. Very difficult for those who have delayed allergies, because the testing is much more tricky. But for those of us who are classically allergic and have the eczema and all of those wonderful swellings, it was an easier process. But of course, there were none of the lovely coconut milks or nut milks. It was solely down to soy alternatives.
Okay. And then how did you start learning about your allergies? How did your mum teach you?
To be honest, she didn't teach me much. It was just the food was there and I ate it. Then they did desensitization when I was about 9. And I have very clear memories of getting eyedroppers full of this mysterious liquid that was supposed to cure my allergies. And for a period of time, it seemed to work. And then when I hit my teen years, I became very ill. The flu-like symptoms, strange swellings, and they really weren't sure what it was, and constant nosebleeds, until my mother was listening to the radio one day, and they said, if your child just gets a nosebleed for no good reason, it's probably allergies. And then I was sent back for testing and came back as allergic to even more things than had previously been thought, and was then on a very restricted restricted diet. And then that lasted through the teen years. And by the time I was off to university at 18, I had to take responsibility for myself.
And then how did you deal with being in school and having to tell your friends or your teachers or whoever was looking after you?
I think it helps being quite a practical person. Mm-hmm. And so my approach was always just, this is what I can eat. I don't mm-hmm. like these other things, or I simply can't. So it was really about being very upfront about it and not getting caught up in the emotion of, oh, isn't it awful? Because you run across that with people of, oh, I couldn't live without cheese. Well, if it made you sick, really, you would. I think our approach, both personally and on the blog, is very no-nonsense of, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And enjoy what you can eat and learn to cook and enjoy food. And don't spend too much time mourning the things that you can't eat. It's like going out to a restaurant. You'll make yourself miserable if you look at the menu and concentrate on what you can't have rather than enjoy on what you can.
Exactly. It's just not, it's not a very happy way to live if you do that. And there's so much out there, especially now.
Oh, absolutely. And you can spend your whole time asking for people to change things and can you take this out of that and can you adjust the following? And everyone ends up frustrated and upset. Whereas, you know, our policy tends to be just look at the menu, figure out what you can have and go from there. Because it's all going to be lovely one way or another.
Yes, definitely. And then you had quite a typical way of diagnosis. So how was your experience with doctors? And I know that your allergy journey continues as an adult as well, doesn't it?
It does, because I've developed urticaria. So that is that charming all over body rash. And some of my allergies have gotten much worse as I've become older. And I've developed chemical allergies. So I spent quite a bit of time on prednisone because I was covered in a rash, blisters, swelling, very unpleasant, and went to a dermatologist and had skin patch testing. So discovered that I was allergic to tocopherol acetate, which, as I discovered, was in my antiperspirant, my moisturizer, my shampoo, my sunscreen. Oh. And it's basically fake vitamin E. So everything for dry, sensitive skin that says has vitamin E in it, it's typically tocopherol acetate. So yes, my allergies continue to develop. Some of my reactions are much worse now as an adult than when I was a child. It's a challenge with doctors sometimes, partially because within my GP, I can often be sort of slightly dismissed as, oh, well, yes, but you're an allergic person. So you're always going to be having allergies and allergic reactions. And there's a little bit of a attitude of there's not much we can do about your skin and your eczema. Just have the steroids. Whereas really what we need is information that helps to manage things. Things like Allergy UK showing people how to apply moisturizer. Now, I had no idea as an eczema sufferer that it mattered how you applied moisturizer. Mm-hmm. I just assumed if I slapped it on my skin, it would be fine. Apparently not. And it is that sort of information that we need more from GPs and more understanding of changing skin routines and changing the moisturizers because the skin reacts.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm in and out of my GP's office a fair amount and occasionally going to have more allergy testing to try and figure out what in the world it's caused, you know, is causing the latest reaction.
When you get upset, because there's always those times when there's one thing that just upsets you about and the allergies sort of tip you over the edge. How do you manage those not so great periods?
I think you're right. For me, it's when I'm getting swellings and rashes on my face. It makes me very self-conscious. Mm-hmm. And it is difficult because people do stare. Mm-hmm. And it is awkward. For me, gentle exercise is the best route to reducing stress and strain. And apart from that, I'm afraid it's down to keeping perspective.
Yeah.
Which is, it may be uncomfortable, it may be a rash, but that's actually all it is. And I think perspective is a very important thing with any ongoing condition that you have to manage. But exercise is important. And as an allergy person, frankly, cooking is important. Taking ownership of your own food and feeling that you have an element of control.
Definitely.
And I think that it's quite important to avoid convenience foods and not get caught up in all the things you can't have. Actually, we need to take ownership of how we eat as a nation, not just as allergy sufferers. And home cooking and home baking is much better for us anyway than the processed food. So we try to turn it into a healthy lifestyle choice rather than I have to do this because of limitations. I think the other thing you have to do is be very open and honest, and your friends tend to be very good, or at least we find our friends are very good about catering. You get the occasional panic phone call. oh, no! But they tend to be very good and hang out with people who are sympathetic and good about these things. If someone continues to refuse to feed you or to listen seriously to your allergies and to take it on board and make you feel bad, then that's not a great friend.
No.
That's the same thing with any emotional situation. You need support.
Yeah, definitely. And I know from my own allergies, anaphylaxis to tree and groundnuts, definitely, like, if there's just one thing that gets, the allergies tip you over the edge. They aren't always the cause, but they tip you over if there's something else going on. So it just sort of makes you think, and I've got this on top of it, even though, you know, it's not actually a big problem. It's just the thing that just makes you really need a piece of chocolate.
Yes, and then you can't have it because
exactly.
I'm actually allergic to chocolate as well, as well as the milk that goes into it. And yes, it does. Sometimes it does feel, you sort of sit down and go, really? This too? Because everyone has the same concerns and all of the same sort of life challenges. But
well, it,
and there are times when you just, you know, quietly sit in the corner and put your head in your hands. But you do just have to knock yourself out of it.
Definitely. And like taking yourself out of it. Because you only let yourself wallow for a little bit and then you go, nope, okay, it's time to move on. It's only a piece of chocolate and I'm going to have this or I'll go bake this. I do that. I go and bake.
Yeah. Well, we also set an alarm clock.
Ah.
So it's sulking timer. So you are, we use the oven timer or something and set the clock. And when the bell goes, you stop sulking about it. And you sit there and you're like, right, you've now spent 5 minutes sulking. You've achieved nothing. Nothing's changed. Do you feel better? No, not really. Well, then go off and do something else. Now, take your mind off it, but don't waste too much of your life feeling lousy about something you can't change.
Definitely.
Just get on and change direction and change your thought process.
I think that is so, so important. And it's not what's talked about a lot at the moment, how you think about allergies, because there aren't many grown-up allergy children talking about it.
No, and there is a lot of bullying at school and a lot of taunting and teasing about, you don't know what this tastes like because. And we certainly had to teach Molly to learn to stand up for herself. And some of it is age appropriate for a now 12-year-old. And some of it was age appropriate for a 6-year-old. And it doesn't work telling people not to be mean. And frankly, taunting can be just as bad as too much sympathy. Oh, you poor thing, it must be terrible.
Definitely.
And you want to cut that all down. So with chickens, when she was little, she'd just look at people, raise her eyebrow and go, I don't eat anything that comes out of a chicken's bottom. And that would be it. No issue overeating eggs. People stopped teasing her because she just put it that way. And it cut it straight down. And the same thing with milk. Where does the milk come from? What's it for? She was just, no, I don't drink anything that was meant for baby cows. And it tends to make it graphic for the children to understand, and at that age made them all go ugh. But they stopped teasing her because she had her coconut alternatives and she was perfectly happy with those. I think the other thing is we're very lucky now with the alternatives that are out there. They're brilliant, they're tasty, they're nutritious, they're all adding in the calcium, and I think there's a much wider acceptance of these things and a lot less of ooh, that looks awful. I remember my soya ice cream was gray. I can still picture it. It was just, it looked awful. It really didn't taste great. Whereas now, the coconut ice creams are all fabulous and they look great and they taste wonderful. So it's not quite the hardship it was.
Yes, they have really improved, especially over the last 5 years. And
Yes.
still, yeah, it's gone on leaps and bounds. Okay, I know you wanted to talk specifically about eczema and urticaria. Have I said that right?
Urticaria.
Urticaria. So tell me about that. And I know you also wanted was it no, it was urticaria, not histamine.
Yes, urticaria is hideous. It is basically hives. And I developed this as an adult. And so across my chest, my back, my arms, my legs, I would just break out in a fairly hideous rash. Antihistamines really didn't control it. It was hot, it was uncomfortable. The more you'd sweat, the worse it would get. And I think that sort of thing really impacts on people's well-being, because the level of physical discomfort day in, day out with urticaria is awful. And there's not so much they seem to be able to do about it. The incidence of urticaria being sort of a one or one off or once or twice or for a short period of time is reasonably common. The chronic urticaria, which I was suffering from, is more unusual, and you need to get to the bottom of it. And one of the problems I had was GPs just saying, "Well, yes, but you're an allergic person," and not really just dosing me up with antihistamines and steroid creams rather than getting to the bottom of what was causing it. And I think when you're an allergy sufferer, it can become a common thing to just put up with it and to be told you're allergic, and it's very difficult to understand what causes these things, and you sort of get given the antihistamines and sent off to quietly suffer on your own. And really, looking back on it, I'm astonished I didn't make a bigger fuss earlier, because I was just miserable. And it affects your mood, it affects work, it affects travel, everything's uncomfortable. When I finally did sort of say, enough is enough. We have to get this sorted out. Then sent to a dermatologist, who then sent me to Guy's and St. Thomas's for patch testing. And that patch testing was 120 aluminum discs on, like, across my body, testing everything they could think of. And it was this one thing, the trochoferic acetate, that I was allergic to. The rest, no, nothing. And that one ingredient would have been causing me years of discomfort and swelling. And I'd been on repeated doses of prednisone, so oral steroids, because the swelling was so bad. When I traveled overseas, I ended up twice in A&E in Canada, twice at various clinics in other countries, because I would suddenly swell up. Now, that's because I was using sunscreen more than I use in the UK, and trochoferic acetate was in the sunscreen. So that's why it reacted so badly elsewhere. But I really suffered for this for years before I was, sort of said, "I really don't care what anyone says anymore. I want to see a dermatologist." Because the attitude was, "Well, you're allergic, you have eczema. Dermatologist isn't going to be able to do anything much. These skin conditions are very difficult," and they really weren't sympathetic. And so if I have one message to people, it's don't suffer for a long period of time without putting your foot down and saying, "No, put me on the waiting list. Let me see a dermatologist. Let me find out what the latest is." Because it's very easy to be dismissed, and it's very easy to skulk off with another dose of cortisone cream with your tail in between your legs and feel like you're making a fuss over nothing, when the reality is you're not making enough of a fuss over something that is impacting on your daily life and your daily happiness.
Yeah, and there are lots of people who think, oh, it's just a little rash. But then, yeah, it's funny how we as humans can cope with a lot as it slowly builds up and don't
take it in our control and really say, no, you've got to listen to me. Because it's very hard with the doctors, because you trust them and you want to trust them and you want, because you're going for them for help. And it's how sort of dealt with that and getting over it and pushing.
I suppose I had, it is that taking that big deep breath and thinking, I'm not leaving without what I want. Mm-hmm. And that they are very good at their jobs, but they don't know what I'm suffering. They're not suffering it. Mm-hmm. Try to find a GP that does understand. We're quite a large practice. And what made a big difference was I went to a GP I'd never been to before. And the first words out of her mouth were, oh, I suffer from eczema too. It's awful. It's, right, I'm staying here talking to you about this because you actually are sympathetic. And so if you're in a practice where there are lots of GPs, do bounce around until you find someone that is going to be sympathetic. Yeah. And make sure you don't diminish it. I think it's a very easy thing to have this attitude of it's just allergies.
Yeah.
Or it's not that bad. When really every day you're uncomfortable. Every night you wake up and have to put on moisturizer. So I was having to go into the loos at work, strip off, re-moisturize, calm my skin down, put cold towels on it because it was so hot and burning in the middle of winter. And every day if you're doing that, it builds up. And it's just not good for your happiness or your productivity or anything. So I think it is just about not realizing that you have to be clear with your GP about how bad it is and not try to diminish it as, it's not all that bad. I'm all right. You can say, actually, I'm not all right with this. And we need to deal with this now.
Yeah, exactly. Have you found over your lifetime of having allergies and as they've got, worse and more severe as you've got older, has your confidence grown in some
way? Yes. I mean, I think what's made a difference for me is doing research.
Yeah.
Is looking things up, understanding, connecting with the rest of the allergy community as well, on social medias, because I think it's really important to talk to other people about it so you're not isolated. And certainly people of my age, we were very isolated because I was the only allergic kid, not just in my class, but pretty much in my school. There might have been another asthmatic child, but that's about it. We're fortunate now because it's much more commonly understood and diagnosed now. Mm-hmm. I think previously kids were just sick all the time and no one really understood why. But it does make a difference to connect with other people and do your research so that you can talk from a knowledgeable position with your GP and sound like you are an adult in control of this situation rather than just a distressed patient or parent.
That is fantastic advice.
I just love Ali's approach to allergies. And not only does she have a daughter who has severe allergies, she also has them herself. And I think this is so great that she encourages you to take the choice and make a decision about your allergies, take control, and also not feel bad about the fact that you can't change it. Focus on the good, focus on the positive, not the things that you can't have. Because after all, allergies aren't about missing out. They're about doing things differently, and I wholeheartedly believe this. I am so excited for next week's episode. As you know, this is a two-parter episode, which is quite exciting. So next week, make sure you tune in for Ali White talking about how she taught her daughter to deal with bullies and how she taught her daughter to stand up for herself, her allergies, and set her boundaries. Okay. And that is it for today. Thank you so much for joining me. You can find Ali's website at allergymum.co.uk, and she's also on Facebook and Twitter at allergymumsco.uk. All links will be on the Eat Allergy Safe website, so make sure you tune in to eatallergysafe.com, and all links will be on the show notes. Thank you again for listening. Also, make sure you remember that any advice that are on these podcasts does not replace professional medical advice. So please, if you have a medical question, get in touch with your doctor. Thanks for joining me, and I will see you next week. Bye. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Modak. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.